This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years with expertise across income and alternatives. Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
U.S. officials expect thousands of migrants will try to enter the U.S. as the immigration policy known as Title 42 ends this week.
In downtown El Paso, there are thousands of people sleeping on the street, primarily outside a Catholic church, within eyesight of the border, and ironically, a Border Patrol station.
And why backlash is building against a $3 trillion clean energy push. Plus, what big oil companies sitting on a mountain of cash are doing with it. It's Monday, May 8th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Oil and gas companies have built up a mountain of cash with few precedents in recent history, boosted in large part by Russia's war in Ukraine, which pushed energy prices higher. The six companies often described as big oil, including Shell, BP, Chevron, and ExxonMobil, have reported nearly $160 billion in cash and cash equivalents across their balance sheets at the end of the first quarter. So what are they doing with it? Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal energy markets reporter Dave Uberti. So, Dave, oil companies typically make large profits, but why are we seeing them making so much cash now?
Well, there's a few reasons. I mean, last year, as you said, there were skyrocketing energy prices after the war in Ukraine. And while those haven't continued through the first 3 months of this year, European companies in particular have made large profits based on their trading arms. And U.S. companies, particularly Exxon and Chevron, have really raked in huge amounts of cash because of their refining margins in particular. So the interesting situation we have now is they've maintained these incredible balance sheets even when commodity prices have continued to fall, which hasn't been the case for the last 15 years or so. The amount of cash that they have on hand, we haven't seen this in recent history.
So what are they doing with all of this cash?
There's a few things. I mean, they spend billions of dollars every year in new capital expenditures. It costs a lot to do new drilling projects, but increasingly they're directing their investments away from some of those capital expenditures. They're increasingly raining these large amounts of cash down on shareholders through dividends and increasingly buybacks. And over the last few years in particular, they've really switched the amount of cash they're giving to shareholders. So it's actually more than they're investing in capital expenditures. If we looked back in their balance sheets 10, 15, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case. They always tended to spend more on drilling projects as opposed to dividends and buybacks. Now, that's a different story.
What does this all mean for the Biden administration and for consumers?
Well, it's a really interesting situation for the Biden administration because while they're investing so much money through the Inflation Reduction Act in new clean energy projects, they're raising the alarm about climate change over the long term. At the same time, they're also asking a lot of these companies to drill more. They want these companies to reinvest their profits from their balance sheets into new drilling projects at the same time, the hope being that it will reduce gasoline and diesel prices across the United States economy. And so far, Wall Street, who effectively owns these oil companies as well as the executives of the companies themselves, they say, no dice. What we want to do is return a lot of this money to shareholders, which is what the market essentially wants.
That's Wall Street Journal energy markets reporter Dave Uberti. Meanwhile, the ballooning size of solar and wind projects is pushing them into more populated areas, drawing pushback from local residents. The projects are fueled by a $3 trillion green energy investment spree, but hurdles from state and local governments that have different development rules are prolonging them. Our energy reporter Jennifer Hiller says the pushback has been extensive from locals, even in states with a long history of renewable development.
They're getting pushback from some landowners. There's still plenty of people who want to lease their land, but there is, you know, a bit of an uproar that is happening in Kansas and New York and kind of all across the country in different ways. Sometimes people don't, they may not want to look at a project. Some people don't like seeing farmland taken out of production. There can be wildlife impacts and things like that. But, you know, a lot of it boils down to projects are large and they're taking up a lot of land. And so it, you know, can change just aspects of the community character. And so that is a lot of what people object to.
Developers and analysts say that many projects will eventually get built, but they will take longer and cost more than expected. Tens of thousands of migrants are expected to arrive in the U.S., with Title 42 set to expire this week. We'll hear from our reporter in El Paso, Texas.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
U.S. officials anticipate that thousands of migrants will attempt to enter the U.S. in the coming days as a controversial immigration policy known as Title 42 is lifted. The Trump administration began using the policy in March of 2020 to quickly expel migrants from the U.S., even when they asked for asylum, due to the COVID-19 public health emergency. The Biden administration will end Title 42 on Thursday. Already, thousands of migrants are gathering in the border city of El Paso, Texas. That's where our immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell is. Alicia, can you start by describing what you've been seeing and hearing during your time in El Paso?
Well, in downtown El Paso, there are thousands of people sleeping on the street, primarily outside a Catholic church, within eyesight of the border, and ironically, a Border Patrol station. Basically, it's a mix of folks who have crossed the border and been processed and released by the U.S. government, and those who have crossed the border without being apprehended, who made their way to this church, hearing rumors that one could find refuge there. Migrants I've spoken to have offered a variety of different details that they think are correct about what will happen if they get here before the 11th, if they're here after the 12th. But the reality is different. It's a mixed bag of truth and fiction. As the Biden administration has described, there is no sort of free pass. The border doesn't open miraculously at 12:01 on the 12th. What will happen is some people will be allowed to proceed to seek asylum and pursue asylum claims in the United States. Others who cross the border, with some exceptions, will largely face swift removal if they don't qualify for asylum in the United States.
Alicia, what's been the local reaction in terms of resourcing and in terms of handling such a large amount of people?
The city is scrambling. It's a tight fit at the moment, if you will. City officials are working to outfit a pair of decommissioned schools, one of which was previously used as a migrant shelter during the last push here at the border in December. They're hoping to get those open this week in advance of the end of Title 42. But again, only people who have been processed by the Border Patrol and released will be allowed to stay there. Once there, city officials and folks from the county and NGOs and such will help them move along through El Paso. Almost no one is intending to stay here in El Paso. The goal is to move on to cities in the U.S., either where people have relatives or where they've heard there may be opportunities. I spoke to a young man on the border last week down outside the church who said he was not sure where he was going to go. His family is in Venezuela. He had been living in Peru, but he wants to make a life in the United States and send money home. So he's open to cities where he may end up.
What is the expectation about how many people might come into El Paso over the next couple of days?
No one knows for certain, but estimates range from about 15,000 to 35,000 people sitting in Ciudad Juarez across the Rio Grande from El Paso, waiting to cross the border before or on the 11th, 12th. Right now, more than 7,000 people are being apprehended a day border-wide by the U.S. Border Patrol. And that number's rising, and Border Patrol officials expect that it will rise. It could rise to as many as 10,000 to 12,000 a day.
What can you tell us about the federal government's response here?
Well, right now, the Biden administration is working to implement a series of new policies. For those who cross the border illegally and have not asked for asylum elsewhere or meet other requirements, they may not be eligible for asylum in the U.S. They are asking and encouraging people to use CBP One, it's a cell phone app, to make an appointment and go to a designated port of entry at a designated time.
So I know right now there are preparations underway for the lifting of Title 42. What are the expectations for what happens after Thursday?
A little bit more chaos than we have right now. Again, from San Diego to Brownsville, Texas, Thousands of people are caught crossing the border every day. Others are not apprehended. But what's expected is thousands more people will come into the United States, both those apprehended and those who evade apprehension. And Border Patrol expects a significant uptick and significant crowding in their facilities, at which point they're going to start revving up efforts to remove individuals who are not eligible for asylum. That'll include removals, formal deportations back to one's home country or back to Mexico in some cases, including folks from Venezuela, Cuba, Haiti, and Nicaragua.
Wall Street Journal immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell joining me from El Paso, Texas. Alicia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In other news, in Manhattan, a federal jury is expected to begin deliberation soon in a civil rape case brought by writer E. Jean Carroll against former President Donald Trump. Carroll has accused Trump of raping her in a department store dressing room in the 1990s. Trump's lawyer, Joe Tacopina, called the case an affront to justice and said Carroll shouldn't profit from it. He said that Trump didn't need witnesses because his defense was that Carroll lied. The jury is expected to get the case after the judge provides legal instructions to guide their deliberations. In California, several cities are extending protections for tenants against eviction or rent increases more than 3 years into the COVID-19 pandemic. Such moratoria were enacted nationwide in 2020 with the goal of limiting the spread of the virus and protecting tenants who lost income from also losing their homes. But San Francisco, Oakland, and Los Angeles are among a handful of cities extending some of those protections into at least the summer. Proponents say lifting all of them now would exacerbate homelessness in cities with some of the nation's highest housing costs. California landlords who have sued local governments over eviction laws say there is no longer any pandemic justification for many renter protections. In China, national security agencies have uncovered espionage by local units of foreign consulting companies. That's according to state media. It's the first official confirmation that a nationwide sweep of corporate intelligence and due diligence firms is underway. It comes after authorities raided the Chinese offices of several foreign companies. China's now official campaign to tighten oversight of the consulting industry on national security grounds is the latest step as Beijing moves to close off the country from foreign influence. It comes as concerns grow among American and other foreign businesses over China's updated law against espionage, which tightens state control over a wider swath of data and digital activities. And the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and the New York Times are among the news outlets awarded Pulitzer Prizes today. The Journal was awarded a Pulitzer in investigative reporting for its series examining how more than 2,600 federal officials invested in companies that stood to benefit from their agency's work. The Washington Post won for national reporting for coverage of the consequences of the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. And the New York Times won for international reporting for its coverage of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Pulitzers are among the most prestigious awards in journalism and are awarded annually by Columbia University. And finally, this wedding season, more couples are saying I do with man-made diamonds on their fingers. More than a third of all engagement rings with center stones purchased last year were created in a lab, according to the wedding planning website The Knot. That's double what it was in 2020. Our retail industry reporter Suzanne Kapner says one reason is that couples are considering the environmental impact of mined diamonds.
There's a growing number of people who are concerned about the effect that mining has on the environment. It causes land disruption, deforestation, water contamination, a whole host of issues, not to mention potential mistreatment of the local miners.
Man-made and natural diamonds appear more or less the same, unless you're looking at them through sophisticated equipment. And as technology improves, more man-made diamonds are produced. Suzanne says that leads to lower retail prices.
The price for about a 1-carat man-made diamond is about a quarter of the price of a 1-carat natural diamond. And as supply of man-made stones increases, prices are continuing to fall. So consumers can get the size stone they want without breaking the bank with a man-made diamond.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.